So yes, I fell off my bike this week. I lost control of the wheel and off I went. And I cannot tell you why I lost control of the wheel. All I can tell you is I've broken my elbow and it's probably going to require surgery. And but one of the things that I wanted to mention, if you anybody out there knows a man by the name of Luis Tiempo, he's a roofer. And he is a nice man who saw me sitting on the side of the road with my bike on top of me, pulled a U-ey and came around and picked me up off the ground. He was my good Samaritan. He took my bike home for me while Jim took me to the hospital. If any of you know Luis Tiempo, tell him I mentioned him during the church service. And if you ever need roofing, Luis might be your guy. Also wanted to mention that this coming Saturday, on July 11th, Zeb and Desi are getting married. And they're getting married here in the sanctuary. And we want to invite you to watch on Facebook Live. If you want to come, we will open the door to you. But if you'd rather watch on Facebook Live, they will be on Facebook Live at 2 o'clock. So you can participate in the wedding then. We have two new cameras that will be installed that will give us different kinds of views and better views. So we invite you to just enjoy the wedding ceremony on Saturday. Well, I'm a little ambivalent about statues. Maybe it's my age. Maybe it's because I don't really get what they're doing. But what I'm not ambivalent about is the destruction of statues that aren't yours. Destroying that which is not yours is depriving someone else of their property, which is theft, which is a violation of the Ten Commandments, which is a sin. But statues, in and of themselves, don't do a lot for me. I get that they are Ebenezers, but if we aren't careful, we will come to worship them or what they stand for, and that's when they become idols. I think we're staring a lot of idol worship right in the face today. In the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, idolatry is a big no-no. Idol worship can be defined as the worship of something or someone other than God, as if it were God. The opposition to icons or images that are revered or worshiped is called aniconism. Even though aniconism started in the Protestant Reformation, only a very few Protestant groups are known for aniconism today. The Amish is one such group. They object so strongly to order idols that they avoid being in photographs, and most of their little girls' dolls don't have faces. The Jehovah's Witnesses don't wear jewelry that displays icons such as the cross. Some idols are not really clearly defined. For example, I wear a cross necklace, which I don't see as idolatry, but some Christians would see it as idolatry. In 1964, the United States Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart said, "I'll know it when I see it," about pornography, because he didn't think it could be clearly defined. For me, the same holds true about idols. I'll know it when I see it. This picture, Zeb, can we get our picture up? This picture was taken on July 4th of a group of protesters bowing down before a statue of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. I see this, and I know exactly what it is. I see this, and I think of another group bowing before a statue in a galaxy far, far away, known as ancient Babylon. Reading from Daniel chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. King Nebuchadnezzar made a gold statue 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then he sent messengers to the high offices and officials and governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the provincial officers to come to the dedication of the statue he had set up. So all these officials came and stood before the statue King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald shouted out, "People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground and worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace. In the Bible, Nebuchadnezzar is one of the most well-known Old Testament villains. He conquered Jerusalem twice. He destroyed Solomon's temple, and he took many Jews as captives, and he initiated what is called as the Babylonian captivity, and this lasted for 70 years. Nebuchadnezzar constructed the big daddy of all statues, which stood 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. Nebuchadnezzar issues an empire-wide decree that everyone far and wide must come and bow down and worship to the big daddy of all statues. Those who would not would be thrown into the furnace. Reading from Daniel 3:7. So at the sound of the musical instruments, all the people, whatever their race or nation or language, bowed to the ground and worshiped the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. When the musical command was played, everyone, no matter who they were or where they were from, were all to fall down on their faces and worship the gold image. In the Hebrew, it reads as follows: as soon as they were hearing, they were falling down. This is exactly what it sounds like. People were walking around. All of a sudden, the music starts playing. They fall to the ground, and their faces are on the ground immediately, and they cannot fall quickly enough. Except for three Jewish youths named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They did not fall down. And some astrologers see these guys, and they rat on them, reading in Daniel 3:8-12. But some astrologers went to the king and informed on the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "Long live the king. You issued a decree requiring all the people to bow down and worship the gold statue when they hear the sound of the musical instruments. That decree also states that those who refuse to obey must be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, whom you have put in charge of the province of Babylon. They pay no attention to you, your majesty. They refuse to serve your gods and do not worship the gold statue you have set up." Now, I don't know about you, but I smell something fishy here. With thousands of government officials in attendance, and they're all supposed to be on the ground, right? With their noses to the ground. How do they know these boys have not bowed down to the idol unless they're peeking? And maybe the boys are peeking right back. And when their eyes locked, did the boys think, "You're judging us for not bowing down? Well, we're judging you right back for bowing down." Most biblical scholars believe that the statue was an obelisk, which is a tall rectangular stone statue very similar to the Washington Monument. There are two schools of thought as to who or what the statue represented. The first is that the image was that of the Babylonian god Merodach, also known as Baal. This was the god of fertility, and he was worshipped through many perverse sexual acts. The other idea that is presented is that it was Nebuchadnezzar himself. It was a common practice of ancient pagan kings to erect statues of themselves, and then at the bottom, where the feet are, with a little gold plate, they would say all kinds of nice things about themselves. Merodach or Nebuchadnezzar, potato, potato, it didn't matter. The boys were not going to bow down to either one. So the people look at them and go, "I can't believe you're not bowing." And the boys look at them and say, "I can't believe you are." So the boys are called in for a quick little chat with the king, which did not go very well. Reading from Daniel 3:13-15. Then Nebuchadnezzar flew into a rage and ordered that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him. And when they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or to worship the gold statue I have set up? I will give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I have made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then, what god will be able to rescue you from my power?" The second meeting had to be 1,000 times harder than the original order to bow. It's hard enough to take a stand once. Greater than that is to take a stand a second time when you're given a chance to escape punishment. But the boys still refuse to comply. Nebuchadnezzar asks them, "What god will be able to rescue you from my power?" Nebuchadnezzar has no fear of the gods. He isn't afraid of anybody. He is a man who has authority over the known world. He sets men in and out of position, and he says which god is or is not to be worshipped. And in this text, he is telling everyone, "I'm the god. You must worship me." And he tells the boys, "I am such a powerful god that there is not another god that can rescue you from me." Well, the Jews just didn't quite agree with that. Reading on Daniel 3, 16 through 18. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, O Majesty. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, your Majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up." The Jews say, "Au contraire, Nebuchadnezzar, our God is fully able to rescue us from you." They understand the power of God. They understand that he can rescue them, even from the mighty Nebuchadnezzar. But they also show that they understand something else. They understand that nobody can dictate how God must act. The Jews say this very pivotal comment: "Even if God does not rescue us, we will never bow down to the big daddy of all statues. And even if God does not reward us for being loyal, we are still going to be loyal." They're going to do the right thing, even if it results in personal disaster. They do not believe in a gumball machine God. A gumball machine God is one who gets us out of jams and heaps tons of blessings on our heads when we slip a good deed into the coin slot. Our God is not a gumball God. Believing in God and following him is not an insurance policy against crises, failures, broken elbows, and bad hair days. Many of us believe in a gumball God without even being aware of it. We are attracted to a gumball God because he works the same way we work. We give to him, and he gives back to us. It's only fair, right? We do our part, and he does his. I believe in God, and he gives me all the things I ever hoped for and delivers me from all the bad stuff that could ever happen to me. Oh, God, I've been such a good girl today. May I have a gumball, please? God, I prayed this morning. May I have a gumball, please? God, I helped someone today. May I have a gumball, please? Well, it just doesn't work that way. There once was a man from first century Galilee who, by all accounts, did everything right. He did nothing wrong, not one thing. God should have been tossing one gumball after another to him. Yet, he still ended up dead on the cross in the prime of his life. It's a good thing that Galilean man didn't believe in a gumball God. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were not worshipers of the gumball God. They did not expect a guarantee if they obeyed God that he would deliver them from the fires. Their obedience to God went far beyond what they could personally get out of it. They were men of conviction. They knew what they believed in, and they believed in the living, eternal, powerful God of the universe. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego believed in one commandment so deeply that they were willing to die for it. Exodus 20, 4 through 6. "You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth below, in the waters either. You shall not bow down to them or worship them." I read an interesting article written by a young Jewish guy by the name of Aaron. And he talked about how his Jewish upbringing taught him not to bow down to anything. So when he was a kid, his parents brought him to martial arts class. And during the first class, Aaron was asked, along with the other students, to bow down to a Japanese flag. But Aaron would not bow. The instructor said, "Please, Aaron, bow like the other boys and girls in the class." But Aaron wouldn't budge. And he told the instructor flatly, "Jews don't bow down." So Aaron's parents placed him in a Catholic school, and everything went really well until a high-ranking priest visited the school. And all of the students quickly bowed before the high-ranking priest, but not Aaron. And the headmaster of the school was so embarrassed, and he quickly sidled up to Aaron and said, "Aaron, you've got to bow down like everyone else." And Aaron stood straight up. He looked the headmaster in the face and said, "I am a Jew, and Jews don't bow down." I'm on Aaron's side. I don't bow down either. We live in a society that is insisting that we bow down. This is more true today than ever before. We are being asked to bow to visible and invisible gumball gods. Society says, bow down to our gods of human sexuality or else. Society says, bow down to our ideological gods or else. 100 years before Nebuchadnezzar's statue was ever built, there was a Jew named Mordecai. And all of this Jews not bowing down stuff started with him. He refused to bow down to the political power of his day. His refusal to bow eventually overturned a corrupt politician and prevented a genocide. Dr. Joseph Tsan was a Romanian pastor during the days of communism. He was in exile, and then he was called back to answer for his Christianity. The Communist Council wanted to put him on the spot, and Dr. Tsan fully expected to be killed because he wasn't about to bow down. So he set his affairs in order and then appeared before the council. He began by saying this to them, "I have to tell you first, I am ready to die. I have put my affairs in order. Your supreme weapon is killing. My supreme weapon is dying. Because when you kill me, people all over Romania will read my books and believe on the God I preach, even more now than they do." The council then quickly decided that Dr. Tsan was right. They decided we better not kill him because more people will believe what he says, and more people will follow Dr. Tsan's God. Dr. Tsan's God was not a gumball God, because nobody is willing to die for a gumball God. When we stop bowing down to the gumball gods, we will come face to face with the cold, hard truth. The gumball gods are cruel. They do not take no for an answer. They will ridicule you if you do not comply. And if that doesn't work, they'll fine you. And if that doesn't work, they'll throw you in jail. And I believe eventually not bowing to the gumball gods will cost people their lives. Too many Christians today are bowing down to gumball gods. Oh, they're not on their knees like the people bowing before MLK's statue. They think, we'll just bow our heads just a little bit, just to keep the heat off. But let me tell you something. For the gumball gods of this age, that is not going to be enough. They will have their pound of flesh. It is no longer going to be good enough for you to bow down to them. You are going to pay for their sick demands with your taxes. And let's not forget, after you pay them, you're going to be forced to cheer loudly for them. I'm not about to bow down to any of this culture's gumball gods, like too many pastors are doing right this minute, this Sunday morning, behind their pulpits. I heard of some high-ranking Wesleyan pastor being told, just tone it down. Don't talk about the gumball gods so loudly. He told him no. He's not in this position anymore. But one day, one of these Wesleyans is going to call me, and they're going to tell me, tone it down. Don't talk about the gumball gods so loudly. My name is No. My middle name is No. My last name is No. I'm never going to do it. I'm never going to serve a gumball god. Some of us are simply going to have to stand up against the gumball gods. And I want to tell you something. This is serious. If we keep bowing down to the ideological gumball gods of this age, we won't be celebrating very many more of America's birthdays. We'll be lucky to celebrate one more. True Christians better buckle up. I'm not talking to the spirit of the age Christians or politicians disguised as pastors, also known as wolves in sheep's clothing. But if you still have ears to hear, hear this. The gumball gods are angry, and it's about to get bumpy. American pastors, and you too, my Wesleyan superiors, get up. Get off your knees. Stand up, Christians, and do not get back down on your knees until you see Jesus Christ coming back in the clouds. We must take a stand. It's got to start today. And I'm standing. I hope you'll stand with me. Let's sing our closing song.